You're listening to Drake in the Morning
with Danny, Wes, and Sid
on 98.1 The Max.
As this month is a likely one to have more issues like this, everything is on high alert all over the world. So do your best. There was nonsense and smoke bombs and fighting in Portland, for God's sake, over the weekend and various other places. As everybody now thinks the answer to solving problems is to march. It's your right to assemble and speak your piece, but they're getting dangerous now, and that's not good. Ariana Grande, I'm not really a fan, never will be, but I do admire her for coming back and doing this, her big show last night in Manchester. She made some real points with folks by going to see fans who were hurt at her show several weeks back, and she brought them gifts and all that stuff. So she apparently has this huge fan base, and they were there and got hurt, and she was very sweet and showed some real heart in this. And then she played last night and had special guests, Justin Bieber and Katy Perry. And
Coldplay was there.
Oh, were they?
Yeah.
Well, okay.
Black Eyed Peas.
At least one or two cool bands. So good. So, you know, hats off to her for doing that. It was a huge crowd, and they played the show in the knowledge that all this stuff had gone on in London. So that's even one more reason to be admirable, I suppose, or to admire her. If something else had happened at her show, that would have been just off the chart, but it didn't. So good, and congrats to her for doing the right thing and not being afraid to carry on. You got to carry on, and these people will get theirs eventually, maybe, or who knows. The album is this week. Here we go again with this, Who Are These People? And I don't know who it is that is buying these records. Bryson Tiller sounds to me like a young country artist. I have no idea. Number one this week, True to Self. Kendrick Lamar's album, Damn, is at number two. The Beatles, a reissue of the Peppers album, which is everywhere, number three. Drake, More Life, Lil Yachty.
Okay.
Number four. I'm sure he'll be around for a long time. Ed Sheeran is still a ginger and has no talent, but no, he's all right. Number six, Bruno Mars. Number seven, Chris Stapleton. What he did, he finally issued a thing about why he had to cancel his gigs. He tore tendons in his hand. You can't play your guitar with your hand all jacked up. So he messed his hand up in various ways badly, and that's why he's had to not play for a bit. But he shall heal up. But that's got to hurt. So best to him. Number nine, various summer Latin hits 2017.
Mm-hmm. Havana Nights.
What is the song that I saw someplace is number one? It's the first song in America to be number one that isn't in English
in like 30 years or so.
Yeah.
I don't remember the name.
What
of
is
I have no idea.
In LA, they have those kind of stations that play nothing but Latin music, and they're just you know huge. But in this country, I have no idea what the song is. And number 10, Harry Styles. That album will be on the top 10 for a long time, I'm guessing.
And this guy Bryson Tiller isn't a country, not a country artist. He is an R&B soul singer.
Oh well, how about that? That's great. So good for him. Tom Cruise, a Scientologist and lunatic. One of the new tabloids has him on it at Walgreens. I almost bought it. He is auditioning new wives.
Is that what it says?
Yes, and that's how he got Katie What's-Her-Nuts. He had a list. Now, I don't doubt these stories for a minute. And some of these stories, I think, are just completely absurd. But with Katie Holmes, he had a list. Now, that's been 10, 12, 15 years ago. But he had a list of actresses on his list that Scientology approved of that he could marry and they could act like they really were in love and stuff. And what he's doing is auditioning people and marrying them and paying them as if they have a contract with him to be their wife, which in fact, they do have a contract to be his wife. So he had to, he meets their parents and stuff and checks them out. And I can't remember the other names that were on the list. But Katie Holmes, I guess, was young and wanted to be a star. And so she bought in and they got married. And somehow magically they had a child that looks exactly like her. So she got, I guess, insemination from someplace because Tom and Nicole had two kids, but they adopted them because Tom couldn't have no babies. But Katie Holmes had one and Nicole didn't. Tell me how that works out. This whole thing is such a scam. So he is on a search now for his third or fourth wife, just to, I guess, to look married and not gay.
And someone can't wait to sign up.
Oh, sure. He has a list, I'm sure, of all the up-and-coming actresses and who buddy, and he might pay them, you know, $10 million a year, and they have a, you know, they have a little contract, and they get married up, and she gets paid and smiles and acts like that she really likes him, and but in the knowledge that he is completely insane. But that's all part of the deal.
Well, he's going to, like, his head's going to split apart, and somebody else is going to come out of it.
At some point, he'll be like one of those guys from Men in Black.
Uh-huh.
He will just peel down the middle, and he will be something from the planet.
Oh, look, Aphrodite.
What is the planet? Who's the god in the Scientology world?
Oh.
I can't think of his name. Zeus.
We haven't paid enough money to Zool or, his name.
I have no idea. Anyway, so while Tom is hunting for a new old lady, he's announced that the Top Gun sequel will be coming out.
Yes.
Called Top Gun Maverick.
He's going to team up with Brett Maverick?
I don't think so. Top Gun Maverick will have him and his fellow fighter pilots dealing with new drone technologies that make their old flying style obsolete. I'm bored even reading this.
Well, now we figured out that he's not a fighter pilot.
No, he's an old guy trying to stay alive.
Using drones.
Yeah. So filming will begin within a year, but no concept on when it'll be out. No one knows. And I wonder if they care. This movie was 30 years old.
Goose is still dead.
What was the film we discussed last week that was, or was it a TV show that was being remade? And it was for an entirely new audience who were fans of it in the 70s. And now they don't care. I can't recall. This happens all the time.
Yes, I have a game for you. Real quick, I just want to see what you say. When did No Country for Old Men come out?
I've watched that about 10 times.
Right.
This is 2017. Javier Bardem and well, what's his nuts? 15 years ago. 12
years ago? We were good. I said 2012. My husband said 2011. Jarman said 2011, and it was 2007. I don't know.
10 years ago, yeah.
Yeah, you're better on it. I thought it was newer.
I am endlessly surprised by that, at how we measure time.
That's what I said. How do we measure time? Because this is messed up.
By movies and by music, but I am always surprised at how long it's been. When I watched the other night, I watched the entirety of The Green Mile. What a great, great film. And I thought, that movie came out in 98 or 9. And I went, what? So that movie is 19 years old.
It's unbelievable.
I don't understand that.
Why? Why'd you do this to me?
And then I'll find something that I thought was relatively new, and it's 5 years old.
I hate that.
It's just really hard to, I don't know why our sense of time as we age and grow older and it all goes way too fast. But your sense of when things happened, you can do it maybe as you get older and your kids get older, You can put it in that time frame, and that's even more confusing and depressing.
Well, I think you don't have, if you don't have those milestones.
Yeah.
I know that I'd seen that movie with my husband.
Which one?
The No Country for Old Men. We met April 2008. So it came out November of 2007. So we didn't see it till, you know, it was out on video.
Well, that's a great date movie.
No. No, we didn't go see it together. I just know I'd never seen it before I was with him. So that was 2008. So I could have seen it within that 9 years. But that's the only milestone I have to judge that. Yeah. Everything else I have, what city did I live in? It happened when I lived in Alabama. It happened when I lived in Los Angeles. It happened when I worked here, did this. Well, then when you don't leave offices and you don't, and you have kids, I can't keep up with their ages.
Yeah.
I just know they're around, so there's nothing to know.
Right, right.
When it happened.
You stop having those points of reference.
Right.
Because they become your focus and their ages and all that stuff.
And the rest of your life stays, for the most part, largely the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Especially if you keep a job for, you know, 10 years.
Yeah. And if you stay in one place for a long time, your reference, I mean, it's just hard to think that you saw this, you know, 20 years ago or some concert that was in 1979. And it's like, what? Yeah, it's a very interesting thing this time. But all these things that are the soundtrack to your life, though, the music and the movies and all the, you know, all these parts of the puzzle, some of them seem like yesterday, some seem like it was forever ago. And then you check on that little, and it says, no, it's 1979. Like those John Hughes films, Pretty in Pink, and how old are they? 25 years old?
No.
30.
No, they're 30.
30?
Yeah. God. Pretty in Pink, Breakfast Club.
Where's Molly Ringwald when you need her? I mean, she's like grown and like someone's grandma.
She sings the blues. She's a jazz singer, actually, not blues. She's
a jazz singer. Yeah, yeah.
And she made
16 Candles, great movie. The Donger, oh man.
The Donger, oh.
And she made a great appearance in some parody of all those movies. Right at
the
end,
she did.
She walks out going,
yeah.
"Ah, damn teenagers."
Yeah, yeah. But it's just really hard to measure. Plus, some movies don't age at all, and they really wear very, very well. And some look really old and out of touch. So it's, I don't know. Who knows? But there's lots of them to watch. And boy, cable shows the same ones over and over and over again.
I watched most of Trainspotting for the first time. Whoever liked that movie?
I tried and I just couldn't hang.
That was weird.
Don't forget.
It's awful.
And if y'all like Tarantino, if you like movies about the mob, if you like movies set in Boston, which many of the finest films around are in Boston. Boondock Saints. If you haven't ever watched that, you've got to watch it. It is a trip. These two guys whose names I don't know. They are Boston Irish. They're brothers, and they go on a mission to kill every mafia member in Boston, the Russian mob, and all this stuff, and some other great characters. But this movie is just incredible. And it's probably 25 years old.
I can tell you in just a second.
Check it.
If I could do math.
Willem Dafoe is in it. He plays the FBI guy or the cop, and he's incredible. Billy Connolly, who is the Scottish comedian, is incredible in this too. He comes in at the very end of it.
It's 18 years old.
18, yeah. And there was a really, really bad sequel made. So sometime, if you like those kind of movies, you've got to watch Boondock Saints and In Bruges are the two that are people that just always, if they're on, I'm going to watch them. If Patton is on, I'm going to watch it. But you go back to these favorite things like little kids do.
Mm-hmm.
The same movies make you comfortable, like the same music does, you know? And so you watch the same things over because they make you happy and you know what's coming every time.
And if it's really good, you see something new.
Yeah, that's very true, too. You always hear a line that you've never heard before or you see something else, but it does make you happy to watch it, and it's not a challenge to have to think and keep up with something. Who needs all that? So, okay. Well, now it's Monday, and there's still no news.
Well.
Is it not over yet?
Oh, this oh, one.
No, it's only 8:30.
We're going to play a lot of great songs, though. Tons of great music. This one. Here's my boy of the day here. The Dallas Morning News claims that America's oldest veteran is a man named Richard Overton. He's 111 years old. Richard smokes 12 cigars every day. He lives in Austin, Texas. He gets up at 3 o'clock in the morning, drinks 4 cups of coffee, then walks around his house to get his blood going before downing a breakfast of whole milk and grits every day. For lunch, he has either chicken, meatloaf, or fried catfish. That's his meal twice a day, one of those three. And he drinks whiskey and Coke all day long and smokes 12 cigars, and he's 111.
Well, good for him.
So all this propaganda about smoking's bad for you, and so is booze.
It's all the genes.
It's all a bunch of, well, it's all in what you got somewhere in you.
When did he start, though? You know, he could have just started last year.
I'm not going to smoke. So then I turned 110 and decided
somehow why. I think he began at about 20.
Email us anytime at mail@drakeinthemorning.com.
I think that the way this appears from the outside is that his wife, who is no doubt just, I mean, beyond devastation, is trying to somehow rectify this, but she's wasting her time. They got the autopsy back and the results and all this stuff, and there were medications in his system. There was no discussion at all of the tracks on his arm, but she put out this long, a letter, if you will, to his fans, or almost like she was doing it to herself, to explain that he was not himself. He didn't mean to do this, and that was not the Chris that any of us knew, and you know, all of these things that are just so, so sad because, well, he's not going to come back and say, yep, I messed that one up. Bad decision there. That's not going to happen, but they released the contents of what was in his body, and there were things that were not necessarily, you know, bad things. They were all prescribed, but maybe mixed, and, well, if it was, you know, kind of overdone, that something happened and put him in a real bad head, and he did what he did, and she cannot explain this away, but I suppose it's natural when this happens to somebody to try to convince yourself and everybody else, and when they're famous, it's even worse, that they didn't mean to do this. Well, meaning to or not isn't really the point. It is still a great loss, and it is a drag. The email address people have written, apparently Wesley says that there's words over there.
Yeah, Cheryl wrote in saying, I've been listening to your comments on the making of the Sgt. Pepper album for the last few months. Now I know why you've been so fascinated with it. I watched the PBS special Sgt. Pepper's Musical Revolution this weekend. And will never listen to those songs the same again.
That's exactly right.
Yes.
And I watched 8 days a week, the Ron Howard film, on Friday night. I have read this new book by Rob Sheffield called Dreaming the Beatles. And then last week I played a bunch of the rough tracks and just them in there kind of, you know, goofing around. And then you hear the finished song. And then last night, this guy, I didn't know what this show would do, but this guy is a British fellow. He is a historian,
yeah.
Jesus, of music, and he knows this stuff. And he also is a player, and he goes back and he analyzes all of these songs and recreates some of the sounds and explains how in-depth and complicated and the references to songs by Mozart and by Bach and just some of the changes and the tempos, and how nobody had ever come close to doing this ever. and really hasn't since.
Right, and the way they had to invent these techniques.
Yes.
The way they, you saw pictures of how the tape was strung out away from the tape machines to make the timing work out right.
Yes.
How they used a whole bunch of different Gallipoli machines to make that one, like, 30-second stretch of song in, was it Benefit of Mr. Kites?
Maybe so, yeah, because they use a Mellotron. They use, there are harps. There is an 80-piece orchestra on A Day in the Life.
Right.
And he explains that.
Yeah.
And he told them all at this certain point, which you can hear in the song, because A Day in the Life was two songs to start with and ended up being one song. And he told them all to begin at the very bottom note on the cello, the violins, everything.
Right.
And then work their way up the scale until they got to the very top, which was going to be E flat.
Right. It's,
and then B, but all be playing
whatever they wanted,
different
in
notes.
Between.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But they were all progressing up the scale from low note to high note in their own way.
Right.
But it was close enough together. It had a sort of a cohesion to it. And they said that was following, I forgot the name of the term that they used, but it's making music by accident.
Yeah. Yeah. And there was some term. Yeah. And they discussed, which I never had thought about, that the entire first side with Penny Lane and Strawberry Fields, the two songs that were cut that weren't on that album, and then they go on to do the other ones. But they were all about childhood and about their memories of their lives previous to being Beatles. And Sgt. Pepper's, in itself, they were so sick of being the Beatles. They were over it. And they created this fantasy band, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club right. Band. And is it Penny Lane where they use four different pianos to make the sound, or was that Strawberry Fields? That anyway, was... yeah, this I mean, if you find this stuff interesting, if you find just the art in the process of making music like this, it is not done like this anymore, and hasn't been for 50 years. But they changed everything with this. That's why people are. There's a new kind of a discovery of this band and this album. And when you hear it or see it explained in this way as he plays it and explains every method that they used, it's even more fascinating. It's just remarkable what they did. But it was not easy. It took them 5 months.
Right.
Yeah, five months.
Takes that long to make a new Beyonce single with all the possible tracks that you can put on the Pro Tools.
Well, they, this was not Pro Tools.
No.
This was the thing where they also explained better than I did about how they had four tracks. And they had four tracks on, four different machines?
Right.
And they would take all four tracks, 4, 8, 12, 16, and then play them together. But it had to be just perfect, though, onto
like
a different track.
Onto track one of a whole different tape.
Wow.
It just blows your mind just to watch it. And this guy, whoever he is, explains this extremely well, and he's very bright, and he understands the music, and he understands what they did. So you will never again hear these songs the same once you see how they were done. Lucy in the Sky, I think, is one of the ones because they had John sing it real slow, and then they sped the tape up to give him more
childlike
kind of a voice. But these songs didn't just happen because this took a real long time for them to do this. That's why it just is so endlessly fascinating. And if you care, that's fine. There's so much to see. If you don't, well, then you must not like music very much, because this really shows you where this began 50 years ago. And it has spawned everything since then. And that's a fact. It just has really made everything else kind of sprung from the magic that was that record and the depth and the complexities of what you could and you know, couldn't do. And they compare it to Mozart and Bach and Brahms and Chopin and its complexities. And it's like, what the hell are you talking about?
And it shows how
but
they
then he shows you, though. Yeah. And it's great. So thank you, ma'am, for acknowledging our talk about this. But it really is a great thing. It's on again tonight, you said?
Tomorrow night. It comes on at 10 o'clock on PB on our local KNO Channel 10.
Well, I support Goodall. Them. Huh?
Howard Goodall is the name of the host.
Well, he is really, really good and very smart. And he breaks these things down like nobody I've ever heard before. And if you are a Beatle fan or just a fan of music, if you're going to school to, you know, learn how to be, you know, something in this business, you got to watch this because it's really does make you think. It's really, really good.
Email us anytime at mail@drakeinthemorning.com.